The Cusp Show. I'm Joe Favorito, along with my co-host Tom Richardson. Tom, welcome back.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Great, great. Spring is finally
looking forward
at some point.
Yeah, and looking forward to this episode today. We're turning to a topic we haven't covered yet, so why don't you set it up and we'll get into the show.
So we've talked about brands and athletes and celebrities and properties. What we really haven't talked about is the event business, how events get made, who are good partners, what do companies want out of events, what do entities want out of events. And there's probably no group in the United States and growing internationally that does events better than Lead Dog Marketing. Today we're going to talk to the founder and CEO, Dan Mannix, who recently was named one of the winners at the Sports Business Awards by the Sports Business Journal for the first time, and certainly was well-deserving. Dan, first of all, congratulations and welcome to the show this week.
Well, thanks so much, and you're too kind for that introduction, but I appreciate it very much and excited to be on.
We are the kings of platitudes, by the way. So
good to have you,
so,
Dan.
So you've got quite a background, NBA, and then obviously the entrepreneur side, but Lead Dog is such a unique company, both from its leadership perspective, from some of the unique events that you work with and properties like Expogo, in addition to traditional companies like Audi. How did Lead Dog get started, and kind of why don't you walk us through how, you know, a young undergraduate at the University of Richmond wanted to work in sports and worked his way through the NBA and became the entrepreneur that you are today with all the people you have at Lead Dog Marketing?
Sure. It was very, I think, different time back then. There weren't as many sports graduate programs. I was actually in a sports management class, and one of my fraternity brothers' dads worked at the Astrodome, and I think I got, like, at one of the last parties our senior year, his dad's number on, like, this little squiggly piece of paper and put it in my wallet and called him, like, in June when I was back on Long Island. And got my foot in the door, ended up getting a job as an administrative assistant at the Astrodome. We owned the Astros, the company I worked for, ran the Astrodome, owned hotels, had a sports management company, so the sports management company that ran other venues. So I was very lucky, saw a lot of different perspectives from the industry. And really just, that's where I first got exposed to events and marketing and just what the industry was all about, as well as my kind of first exposure to agencies, which not necessarily a great experience with an agency when I was about 24 sparked saying, hey, I could have my own company someday. That was kind of initially, I was 3 years in Houston and then moved back to New York to work for the NBA.
And how did you get that job for the NBA?
So I sent, I'd been at the Astrodome about 2 years. I had a couple people had approached me about a job. So it kind of started opening my eyes to other opportunities, and always having been a huge NBA fan, actually in my college sociology class. I remember when our professor went around and asked people what they wanted to be when they get out of school or what their dream job was. And I'll never forget, I said, I want to be general manager of the New York Knicks. And he kind of asked me twice because he wasn't a sports guy. No, seriously, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I want to be general manager of the New York Knicks. And it was almost like he wanted a different answer. But so I ended up writing a couple long letters to the head of international of the NBA, the head of the events department, and to David Stern. And it's probably a mistake because I think, or in some ways a mistake, I copied David Stern on all the other letters. So later when I got hired, someone was like, you know, who's this young guy copying the commissioner on these letters? But I wrote a letter saying I want to someday be commissioner. I'd love to get my foot in the door. And got a form letter back that said, thank you, we received your stuff, but, you know, kind of, we'll call you, don't call us. So I thought, okay, that's where it's going to stop. But as I tell young people, I used to teach sports entrepreneurship, and I always say, like, you know, it's classic, you don't stop at the first door that closes. So I ended up calling these vice presidents. I remember one of the vice presidents called me back and said, hey, we may be hiring in a couple months. It was the head of international, and I was so excited. remember going home for Christmas that year telling my friends, oh, I may have something with the NBA. And then I called him in January, and they were like, oh, he's moved to our Tokyo office. And it was when, I think it was the first international, or one of the first international offices the NBA opened. So I thought, okay, that's it. Like, what a bummer. Like, he'd gone to Japan. And then randomly, a couple months later, I got a note from, this was like, you know, before email, got a note from my first boss saying, hey, if you're ever in New York, let us know. We are considering growing the department. This was in the special events department. And immediately called him and said, oh, you know, and I've made up a couple trips a few times, but, oh, I can be in New York anytime. So I ended up flying up to interview. I'll never forget getting stuck in an elevator on my way to meet Russ Granick, and the elevator got stuck, and literally it took like about a half hour for them to get me out of the elevator. So I had to run over to the NBA office. So I met Russ Granick like panting, but luckily I still got the job.
Well, you obviously were mailing letters at that point. It wasn't, this is a little bit before email, not to date everything. One of the things we've talked about on this show time and again, Tom, is the disruptive side. And, you know, it sounds like, especially in your entrepreneurial career, and even probably a little bit with where you were kind of in the ground floor at events at the NBA, the value of disruption. So can you walk us through some of the disruptive things maybe that you've seen?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think one thing just related to disruption, related to careers, you know, I always ask when I'm talking to students, I'll say, how many of you would like to have a job at the NBA? And everybody in the room will raise their hand. And I'll say, how many of you think if you sent your resume in that you'll be able to get in the door and get an interview? And like maybe two or three people out of 40 will raise their hand. And then I'll ask, well, how many of you would do something different, not send a resume, but do something unique to send to try and cut through the clutter? And I'm always surprised that like only two or three or four will raise their hand. And I'm like, well, if there's such a small chance that you're going to get a call back from sending your resume, why wouldn't you try something that's going left when everybody else is going right? So, and I've tested it out. I had a student of mine send a pizza to a guy I went to college with who's in sports and saying, you know, hey, you know, with some, you know, corny line of like how they would be there for them and doing the different little things that matter. And sure enough, he got a call back when he called. And I think, you know, one of the things that I always have taken away from the NBA and try and apply to Lead Dog is, you know, David Stern was nothing if not disruptive. And part of disruptive was just the highest standards. And I was always, you know, amazed at from the little details to the big picture things. Like, you know, he wanted to know the little details because the little details, and when you start talking about events, like you can have the big plan, but if you don't cover the little details too, then the best ideas in the world can totally fall apart. And just the standards that David had and now that Adam has there, it's like, you know, it's a great, you know, a great training ground. Learned an incredible amount and felt very fortunate to work with some of all the, you know, folks that worked with there.
Hey, Dan, it seems like everybody that we've met who's worked at the NBA has some classic David Stern stories about that very point, about his attention to detail and his exacting standards. So you got to share a story or two. Can you do that?
That's interesting. It's a loaded question. I mean, David, you know, you hear the word visionary and I'm biased, but, you know, best commissioner of the time. And again, I think there was a culture that permeated through of like trying to be the best. I remember when I started and my boss said to me, he goes, you know, you may have been an all-star at your job at the Astrodome or an MVP and stood out, but he was like, guess what? Everybody here was, you know, doing the best jobs at their previous companies. And this, he was basically saying, this is a team of MVPs. I think David posed a lot of questions that made you think about things. And that's kind of what I remember. And I also remember, and it's something I've applied to today, where like every intern we have, I want to know what university they go to, learn their names. I remember when I first started, I'm in the hallway and granted, it wasn't the size organization it was today, but I think the first time I said hi to him in the hallway, he was like, oh, Mannix, Richmond Spiders. And I was like, wow, he's remembering the university I went to. And I'm just this, you know, low-level new employee. And, you know, those are the kind of things that stick with you of how you want to end up, you know, treating people and creating a culture that I think was impactful for me.
Dan, at what point did you have it sounds like you had some of these feelings when you were working at even before the Astrodome, but you had some thoughts about doing something more entrepreneurial. So at what point in your MBA development did you actually start feeling more confident about branching off?
So it really started at the Astrodome. And it was partly was the environment that one of my bosses set up. Neil Gunn, who's the executive vice president, set up a space that a 24-year-old could come to him with crazy ideas. And I remember reading this little tiny blurb in the paper saying that the 1994 World Cup organizing committee was looking for bid cities. I played soccer my whole life. I sat on the bench at Richmond my freshman year. So I went to him and said, we should bid on the World Cup. And he looked at me and he's like, Mannix, you know, you do realize it's played outdoors on grass and we were at the Astrodome with turf. And I said, can I look into this a little bit? Can I ask them to send the packet? So we did. And short story, I won't tell you the long story, reached out to Texas A&M. We got the lead agronomists. Then we ended up getting the Silver Dome and Super Dome to come involved to prove that grass could grow indoors. We did a grass test in the Superdome in New Orleans for, I think, 21 days to show that the grass could sustain, and ended up kind of leading the city's bid efforts, wrote the bid. It was an awesome experience, and unfortunately, the Superdome got selected. GM, you know, was one of the big corporate sponsors. I think that had part of to do with it probably, but that's where I got assigned an agency to help me with that and said, oh, wow. What are agencies, you know? Kind of was the spark, started doodling initials of my friends' names, but it's never my style to have like a company name that would have my name in it, which is not my thing. And so doodled Lead Dog, but then got the job at the NBA. And I think at the NBA where it really kind of put me in a position to learn more about managing and leading were the two opportunities where I got sent off to different cities. And luckily, this didn't give me a complex that the NBA sent me to Toronto when John Bitoff had been, you know, awarded the Raptors and they took over the World Championships of Basketball, which was Dream Team 2. So I moved up there and it was a very entrepreneurial office. They were hiring all these new people. Most of them were, you know, all almost auditioning for the Raptors where I was more just on loan from the NBA. And then I finished that. I thought I was moving back to New York, and I had a meeting with Russ Granick, the deputy commissioner, and Steve Mills, who's now, you know, of the Knicks, who oversaw the Olympic stuff at the time. And they said, hey, we want you to go to Atlanta. We have an opportunity to get involved with the Olympic basketball. So I ended up being on loan for a year and a half to the Atlanta Olympic Committee and ran the basketball competition there. So I really ended up in terms of managing people, and I made a lot of mistakes in terms of managing and leading, but had to build a staff up of 40 people and about 400 volunteers. And it definitely was like the pieces that enabled me to learn so much and make a lot of mistakes to then, I think, be in a much better position to start a company someday.
And what was the final impetus to actually start Lead Dog?
So I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to go work on the launch of the WNBA. Really, it was almost like a startup within the NBA, which was great because it was a small group of us. But after the first season and we were going into the second season, I had an itch to be doing something else. And I don't want to say much to the chagrin of my dad because he was very supportive until I actually finally took the leap. But decided to quit and go backpacking for close to a year, just to really explore and learn more about the world. And it was definitely one of the most incredible life experiences I've ever had. Right before I left, I was planning to go, and then something fell on my lap that I said, oh, this could be a good test to have an agency. I got an opportunity to freelance with the Goodwill Games for 6 months, and I ran the basketball competition in Madison Square Garden, which being a kid from Long Island was a thrill, but I also oversaw all the entertainment for all the sports. It was a great kind of consulting project. It was a new world for me playing that role. So I incorporated the lead dog name, did that, and then went backpacking for 10 months. And actually, from the day I resigned at the NBA to my backpacking trip, I didn't shave, so I had this very long goatee when I got back from 10 months of travel. And then about a couple weeks later, I found myself in Fenway Park working on the All-Century team for MLB All-Star, which was really the first lead dog project when it was just me.
And Dan, so you come back with the goatee, and obviously this is not the kind of the usual kind of, oh, you know, I went and I had an internship and I kind of moved up the ladder. I mean, you literally traveled around the world trying to find, the golden way to get back to figure out how to run a business. So you come back and lead dog starts, and then how does lead dog start? Where does, because a lot of the people who listen to this are young entrepreneurs trying to find money, trying to take ideas and make them bigger. What was the first big idea?
So I got back and I just started calling people that I had built relationships with. And, you know, was again, fortunate enough that Steve Helmuth, who is a great guy, who's been at the NBA for a long time. Well, he had left the NBA for a short stint at Major League Baseball. And a woman that we used to hire, their entertainment production company at NBA All-Star, was hired to do the MLB All-Star, the All-Century team in 1999 in Fenway, which, you know, was this historic park and this historic moment. And it was the All-Star game where Ted Williams came out on the golf cart and all the players came around him. I was actually the guy who had to walk out with a headset after it was going on for 10 minutes and be like, okay, guys, we got to get off the field. But so, you know, I think the thing is like when you build relationships, keep your relationships and be true to your word, because the reason I got that opportunity in Boston, I think, is because I made a good impression on Steve Helmuth at the time I was at the NBA. Joy Berman, who was the woman who brought me in, like I worked with her closely and hopefully made a good impression on her, or that opportunity wouldn't have presented itself. So went in there for a week. I think did a good enough job on the field, helping to produce running rehearsals with ESPN. There was a celebrity softball game with Matt Damon and all the, you know, it was a fun event. I wore the headset for the Home Run Derby and was, you know, but then that was over. It was a week and was back in New York, like, and basically convinced two people, one gentleman, Charlie Schwartz, who I worked with at the Olympics, and Siobhan Dennehy, who I worked at the NBA, to join Lead Dog. And I remember, I'll never forget, like, I mean, this was, again, just me being naive, and I had read Mark McCormick, the founder of IMG's book, you know, I don't want to misspeak the title, but it's like What They Don't Teach You at Harvard Business School, and, you know, and Richmond's nowhere near Harvard, so I was like, okay, let me read this book. But I remember saying to Charlie when trying to convince him to join, you know, we can be the next IMG. And he was like, you know, what are you smoking? You're crazy.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
And I was like, why not? Someone's got to be. I'm like, why can't we be if we do great? And I think one thing that we still say today is like, the principle was like, we're going to bring great people together. And if you do great work with great partners, our clients, like, then anything is possible. And that's kind of been one of our core mantras throughout the 17 years.
You mention a lot of women that work with you and around you and have inspired you. And something that I think people would be interested in is the amount of women and the causes that Lead Dog works with, and how, and again, not knowing you, you never want to kind of sound like, oh, you know, I'm the guy out there getting women opportunities, but you've really done that. And how have you been able to kind of cut through that where people say, oh, there's not enough women in sports and people should be creating more opportunities, yet you found ways to find amazing people who, by the way, just happen to be women who've grown this business to where it is today, and how important is that to, you know, to find, you know, that equal balance, men, women, minorities, in a business like Lead Dog, which is touching so many places?
So I think for me, it's always about just the person. You know, it's not, I mean, it sounds corny to say, oh, it's not man, woman, or black, white, you know, but it really is the quality of the person, and that, and I trust my instincts when you meet someone and you feel like they have that fire, that heart, that's that point of difference that's between an average person who's going to like be just a, you know, do their job and punch the clock versus someone who's going to like push the limits. And I think the other side of it is in some ways, and maybe related to race issues as well, I think there aren't as many opportunities, and naturally people who are looking to create opportunities, and because I've gotten to know Sue Roden, the founder of Wise, and Val, who inspired me. So I actually consciously now, I think, want to help create those opportunities, because I, you know, hopefully have some, you know, have some impact that we can do as a company that's hiring. So, you know, we're consciously trying to increase diversity, and I'm pushing our even our intern committee to plant seeds at historically black colleges, and because I also think that like there's too much in the sports industry of maybe the same thinking. We just hired someone 2 weeks ago, and the person worked second jobs waitering and paying her way through school. And I was like, when it came out in the interview, but I'm like, God, that put that on your resume. That's amazing. That shows your work ethic. That shows you care. Same thing with that. We hired a guy who interned at Roc Nation, and he started telling me, I got up at 5 a.m. to get in there early because they were, my boss was in there early. So it's like, where do you find those like little things that show someone's character? And I'd like to think we're the only 150 plus sports marketing agency that has a majority of female partners. And actually we have 71% of our staff is female. So, but that's become part of our culture of trying to be open and hire the best candidate.
Thinking about the hiring of new people, like especially younger people, either interns or entry level or early career people, let's call them, I think we get a good sense of what character traits you're looking for. But what about actual skills? What do you want people bringing to Lead Dog right now? Like right now, here we are in 2016. What skills are most important?
To me, there's always three things I say to people. It's like, you know, you have to have a base level of smarts, right? And intelligence. Like, because if you're just not smart at all, then the other two things I'm about to mention can be great, but then you're just going to end up like struggling. So, you know, some base level of education and smarts. But then much more important than that, it really is about enthusiasm. And for me, it's like enthusiasm and attitude. You take someone who's got, you know, the base level of smarts, if they have a great attitude and they have great enthusiasm, like they can do anything. Like we did a Manchester United, event recently, and it was kind of a busy weekend. We also had America's Cup going on. And I remember distinctly, I stopped by where I was at both events, and I was asking our team, as I do a lot of times on site, hey, who's the intern that's the rock star, trying to think, you know, which one we're going to hire. And invariably, the feedback on site related to the interns was always leaning into the person's attitude and, oh, this person just so open has jumped in. And it's very much, you know, having an attitude of like, I'll help do anything, not, oh, that's not my job, or I wasn't supposed to do that, or, oh, I got to pick up garbage now. Like, you know, so that mentality of just roll your sleeves up. Now, separately, from an industry standpoint, I think, you know, one, we're really been looking to, because clients are constantly now pivoting, trying to be more nimble, which is exciting for us because the biggest brands now, I think, are struggling with keeping up with, you know, the well-funded startups, the companies that have an entrepreneurial spirit. So I think we're looking for strategic analysis while also being able to be nimble. So not strategic analysis of thinking that needs, oh, I need 6 months to create this plan, because just as an agency, we have to move really quickly. When people can bring, you know, matching creative and strategy, which becomes a very dangerous combination. I'm always encouraging young people, like, read the New York Times cover to cover every day, and you'll bring perspective to people that then they won't think of you as being 24 or 22. It's like, oh, this person's got a point of view. And not necessarily just with blinders on. Like, just because you want to work in sports doesn't mean you shouldn't be reading about finance or the environment or purpose-driven marketing or just all the different things, because it all intersects. And when you can bring that perspective, to me, that's where the most value can come to the clients. And I also think that's where a lot of the industry, like, does look to potentially now. So there's an opportunity for people to be disruptive when they bring different perspectives.
We love knowing the specific outlets or people or sources you use for your primary information. So if you've got a few favorite Twitter accounts you follow or a few favorite podcasts or blogs, if you could be specific, that would be terrific.
Sure. So well, just starting with that, I have become somewhat obsessed. And then once I get into something, then I start to just like probably overshare it. But then a couple people here are now so into Tim Ferriss, of 4-Hour Workweek. The other one is Alec Baldwin, Here's the Thing. He's got just a really interesting, eclectic interviews, but from all walks of life. So, and it really, again, this is related to the lens of just sports. So, yes, he's got his interviews with John McEnroe, which is really great about him growing up on Long Island and playing different sports. But then he's also got Lorne Michaels from Saturday Night Live and the early years, and Lena Dunham and Dustin Hoffman. So that's wonderful. And then from an entrepreneurial standpoint, Fast Company.
And Dan, how do they find you? Where are you? Facebook, Twitter, and Lead Dog as well, as we wrap it up.
You know, we're in all the usual spots of LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter. But my form has been more, I think, speaking at conferences. I'm speaking at the Thought Leaders Summit coming up for Sports Business Journal. I'm on a panel for the future of content at Promax coming up. So those types of spaces.
Our guest today on the CUSP podcast, the Columbia University Sports Podcast, talking all about sports business, is Dan Mannix, the founder and CEO of award-winning Lead Dog Marketing. Dan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The CUSP Show. That's the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson. My co-host is Joe Favorito. And our production assistant this week is Columbia student James Appel. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple's podcast app, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and on other key platforms. You can also see it at blogtalkradio.com/The CUSP Show. And you can get in touch with us on Twitter at CUSportsBiz, that's B-I-Z. Also, you can find out more about our program, the Columbia University Sports Management Program, by going online at sps.columbia.edu/sports-management. Thank you.